This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Sharon Pappas. Sharon's the Chief Nursing Executive at Emory Healthcare. Emory Healthcare is a great institution based in Atlanta, Georgia, the Atlanta area. We're going to talk to Sharon about the role of Chief Nursing Executive, the big priorities, advice for leaders, and more. Sharon, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm glad to be here. Thank you, Scott. My name is Sharon Pappas, and I have the privilege of serving as the Chief Nurse Executive for Emory Healthcare, which is about 11 hospitals, 200 clinics, and close to 8,000 nurses across the entire system. That's a third of our entire workforce.
So that's magnificent. So 8,000 nurses, a workforce of about 25,000 or so in total, a big, big workforce, big footprint. Talk to us about the role of Chief Nursing Executive. And what do you view as your top sort of, you know, responsibilities in that role?
Okay, great question, because it's so easy for chief nurse executives just kind of to be a CNO now of more hospitals than just one. And so I think we differentiate the role of chief nurse executive by one that is really focused on almost their entire time with a little bit of operations, particularly during this last year of the pandemic. But largely my role as the system chief nurse is strategic nursing leadership, being that person who looks out ahead 5 years and says what's coming, what should we anticipate, and what should we plan for. Now, always, just like any chief nursing leader, you're responsible for nursing practice. But in this case, it's a little more of a focus that you want to be leading an entire system where your clinical practice for nurses is standardized across the system so that you can optimize a lot of the efficiencies of scale that that you get when you're doing things the same way. But most importantly, it's for patient safety because you have nurses who are part of our float pool that move across all of our hospitals and clinics. And we want to make sure that wherever they are, that their practice of nursing looks very much the same, and that we can guarantee consumers and patients that what they see at Emory location will be the same as the other. The final thing I would add to that is one of the things I always think is essential for a chief nurse executive or a hospital or clinic CNO is to make sure that their organization does well because of nursing. And those are really, in summary, the large parts of my role as chief nurse executive.
And Sharon, that's a fascinating actual perspective because, right, the typical chief nursing executive worked really closely as a CNO with one hospital, with one sort of role, really a morale booster, a police person, a recruiter, a keeping everybody doing their roles and figuring out where staff went and so forth. Now the role of a chief nursing executive in a system where you've got literally 8,000 nurses becomes a much different and bigger role, doesn't it? You end up much more involved in, you know, how do you make sure if you've got 8,000 nurses today, what do you need 5 years from now? And do you have a sense of what you need 5 years from now and where those are categorized too, because they're not all in one place either. And so how do you sort of look at some of those issues of what's the staffing going to look like 5 years from now? How many nurses are already in their 50s or 60s that might be retiring in that period? Can you keep them on? How do some of those issues look to you?
Yeah, well, I would say that that whole strategic workforce planning is an important aspect of the role because nursing is changing and we're still learning what has been the impact on nursing from the pandemic. But I would also say it's more strategic in the realm of sitting at that system strategy table, understanding where the organization needs and wants to grow, understanding what our payer contracting is looking like and what outcomes our payers expect. And then you begin to decipher what would a nursing workforce look like to deliver on all of those strategic items. And so that's an even more important aspect than just planning for the workforce for this year and next year. It's really looking ahead, forging relationships with your different learning institutions for nursing, both in pre-licensure practice as well as advanced practice, because what we've learned is that many of our provider roles are shifting to the advanced practice roles, and we need to be ready for that as well. But I think as far as what nursing's looking like, we're still learning. But one thing I know for sure about it is that we need to build our nursing workforce and rebuild it both physically as well as emotionally, because our workforce has been through a lot in this last year. And so those are kind of a two-pronged approach that we're developing tactics for right now.
And talk about the shift from, give us a sense, because not all of us understand. You got advanced practitioners, we got registered nurses, we got licensed practical nurses. Talk about the different categories of nurses, ICU nurses. How do those all overlap, and how do you categorize and look at your 8,000-person workforce in nursing?
Yeah, well, that's a really great question, and I think that one of the things that is kind of at our core is really working with nurses during their resident year and also, you know, the first few years after practice to really get crystal clear about what their career path is. We have dedicated nursing resources here, which I think has worked out so beautifully, of an individual who is really an expert in career planning, so that she's able to help nurses actually develop their own career path so that, you know, do you want to be a critical care nurse? Okay, that's how we'll begin to develop your onboarding as well as your professional development over the next couple of years. Do you want to eventually be a CRNA? Well, then critical care becomes a step in that process, and we plan for that advanced degree and not just we don't try to not be disappointed then whenever you have met your admission requirements to a CRNA program after 2 years in critical care, you know, so that, you know, we're actually building for where these individuals think their passion is and what their purpose is. And so to me, that's a real important aspect of nurses. They're not interchangeable. And now that we've got such a huge clinic presence across Georgia, particularly in the metro area and the surrounding counties, you know, we're really recognizing the benefit of nurses with specialties in brain health, for example. As you know, Emory has really got a strong brain health program in our work with the Wounded Warriors and many other aspects. You know, we have a nurse who is leader of a clinic of helping families deal with dementia diagnoses. And so, you know, those kind of roles we're really identifying as important nursing roles that we want to perpetuate and expand in some cases. Of course, you always have hospitals, and you always have hospitals, and hospitals have hospital nurses. And so, you know, that's always a given there. But I would say the ambulatory aspect of nursing practice is one that we're just learning a lot about, particularly as it relates to some of the specialty clinics as well as telehealth. And so, you know, we'll see where that goes. But right now, our primary focus is really rebuilding that nursing workforce that was taxed so heavily during the entire pandemic.
Congratulations. And talk about resilience, burnout, managing nursing through this pandemic. The nurses have done a stellar job, truly healthcare heroes. Are they going to be exhausted? Are they going to recover? Are they going to retire? What do you sort of project coming out of this year or so that's been just an insanely challenging year over the nursing community?
Well, I will say that we're all over the board in terms of what has really kind of diminished our nursing workforce. You know, we do have a group of folks who said, it's time for me to retire, and that's what they did. We have some folks who said, you know, I just don't think I want to practice in a hospital, and so they left for other positions. And then we also had some folks, and this is probably what I'm most worried about, are nurses who left to go for the very lucrative travel assignments. And right now, you know, we think that the demand for travel nurses is declining, but I still think I'm not ready to say that's going to stay that way, because we don't know what's going to happen as states reopen and more people are exposed to more people, and we'll see if the rate of COVID begins to go back up in those states. But we have to always kind of keep watch over the demand for nurses, particularly critical care nurses right now, which are really at a premium in terms of how much organizations have to pay for travel nurses to fill those roles. And I'm thinking that even in organizations when they're your own employees, we're going to have to relook at the whole way we compensate nurses to make sure that we're doing the appropriate thing. And so, you know, to me, I would say the thing I'm most concerned with are what's going to be the post-RN traveler workforce look like? Are nurses going to leave the travel roles and come back to the hospitals? Or, you know, is it going to be a mixture of nurses who like that traveler lifestyle and those who really want a home? But I do know one thing for sure, and that patient safety is heavily dependent on relationships, you know, at the unit level. And whether our workforce is made up of temporary people or permanent people, we've got to have a keen focus on whether or not that unit level team is sound, because them depending on each other and not just viewing nurses as interchangeable across those units is really critical to patient safety. You know, you want your teams helping each other out. You want your teams to know each other, and you want the members of the team to feel like they belong, because I think that's what fulfills nursing purpose and gives us that feeling that we're doing a good job, because hard work is not the main culprit of nursing burnout. It's when you don't feel like you've done the best job that you could. That's what is a big cause of burnout and the moral distress that comes along with that. And so we're really working on our cultures to make sure we have belonging, we have decision-making seated at the right level in the organization, and that we have leaders who are good relational leaders and not leaders who are just people who execute transactions in order to get a 12-hour shift staffed in the work done. So lots of work there, and it'll take us a while before we really are able to restore the cultures of belonging and engagement that we aspire to here at Emory.
No, fantastic. And take a moment on a bigger question. What can be done? You've got this fascinating perspective at one of the great health systems in the country. You oversee a team of 8,000 nurses, which is a large team. But let me ask you this question before I get to the harder, bigger question. Did you ever think as a younger person that you'd end up managing a group or being in charge of a group? And I know you don't view it as in charge, but helping to lead a group of 8,000 nurses. Did that ever, at what point did that become something that became part of your mindset? I might be leading a group of 8,000 nurses. It seems like a tremendous undertaking.
You know, that's a fun question to think about, but I just give him a belief that God is good and that he puts me where I can serve. And I never sat back and said, I want to be the chief nurse of a 11 hospital, 8,000 nurse system. I never did that. But, you know, I found myself here, and my quest now is looking at where can I make a difference. And how do I need to contribute here at Emory in order for patients to get the best care they can? So that's kind of my story, in that, you know, I just have a good time doing this, and I'm really privileged that that I'm able to be a leader in this organization.
Just magnificent. Talk from one of the deeper questions. How can we improve the U.S. healthcare system? I mean, it's a magnificent system, but there's big gaps. How do you improve the U.S. and there's big inequities, but it's a great system. How do you improve the U.S. healthcare system? Just a couple thoughts there, and I know it's a big question.
Oh, yeah. It's a couple. I'll give you a couple of thoughts just, you know, in thinking about this in the short term. One is that, you know, patients deserve access. And, you know, I had a physician once when we were talking about the various roles of providers, you know, that you can be a physician provider, a PA provider, a nurse practitioner provider, you know, and he said, I would rather look at this and say, what does the patient need and who is the best to provide what they need? And I think that made a lot of sense to me, Scott, and I just really think that access is an important way to improve the U.S. healthcare system. You know, and if we could get past who gets paid for what, and, you know, that people are stepping in so that I don't get revenues, I wish that we could get to a place to really ask ourselves, who's the best person to provide what this patient needs? And so that we come about healthcare in teams and gives us the ability to have better patient access for healthcare. So that would be one way that I would really look at it, you know, just really taking the blinders off the reimbursement aspect of healthcare and say, you know, what does this patient need? And maybe a team of providers are paid for healthcare and they decide how to best deliver it. And I think that would be a fabulous next step. I would say the other thing, and I'm going to take a line from my colleague, Chris Sinsky, who I've heard her say this now several times, and it's really an important phrase. And it goes like this: how would healthcare look different if we prioritized relationships? And so if you think about healthcare and how burdened it is with regulation, how burdened it is with policy, and the archaic systems sometimes that we have to use to give patients care, you know, what if we put that secondary to how do we really make sure there's a strong patient-provider relationship, patient-nurse relationship, because that's really where the truth is told about what patients need, and that's really at the core of why we are all in healthcare, because healthcare is a relational endeavor. So those of us who love relationships, we're probably drawn to healthcare for some of those reasons. And so what if we prioritize that patient relationship and created our work systems around what would meet the patient's needs? And I know that sounds a bit Pollyannish and perhaps even, you know, fantasy, but I do think that at our core, that's why we are in healthcare, and I wish we could think about that in a different way. So those would be my two comments about how we could improve the U.S. healthcare system.
Sharon, thank you very much. And Pollyannic is fine because at the end of the day, it's looking at incremental changes and so forth, but also bigger changes. How do you look at things and how you change the paradigm? So it's all helpful to sort of look at things in different ways and fantastic. Sharon Pappas, Chief Nursing Executive of Emory Healthcare. I didn't realize that you're up to 11 different hospitals now, including a great academic medical center and 8,000 nurses, 25,000 employees. Sharon, thank you for joining us in the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Just terrific.
You bet, Scott. Glad I could participate. Thank you.